Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest this morning is Paul Wedding. He is a best-selling author, a radio talk show host, and a public speaker. In the spirit of this holiday season, he has a very interesting story to share about his personal encounter with God that transformed his life forever. Paul, in his own words, was a con man, thief, cheat, and a liar. He called home a dumpster in Westminster, California, lived in garages, and was addicted to drugs, alcohol, sex, and gambling. On April 19, 2003, at 12:37 p.m., his life changed. While standing in the kitchen of his mother's home, he felt a presence overcome him. This presence had no voice, nor was it a religious conversation taking place. It was God. His best-selling book, If You Only Knew What You Already Know, detailed his amazing personal experiences and insights. Paul is here to talk about his life's journey and how we could all live our life with passion and purpose. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Johnny, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure hosting you this morning. I read your book, and it's wonderful. You have so much wonderful insights in it. It gives me a better understanding of who I am, why I did things the way I do, as we're all connected. So I really appreciate that very, very much.
I appreciate the kind words, Johnny.
Oh, you're very welcome. But before we get into your wonderful book, I would like for us to talk about your early years. Where did you grow up and the community you lived in? Paul, please walk us through your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. Well, Johnny, I grew up on the east side of Detroit, Michigan, in a group of smaller communities called the Gross Points. And they were, you know, excellent schools, quality housing, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I had a bad childhood, because I did not. I was a Cub Scout, involved in school athletics. I was a devout Catholic. Every Sunday I was in church from 6 in the morning until noon, serving as an altar boy. We spent our holidays with the grandparents, and even after my parents divorced, life really was not that bad. And I'm not going to sit here again and tell you I had a bad childhood or offer some of the reasons or excuses that modern-day psychology has given us as to reasons our lives turn out the way they did. But for me, at a very early age in my life, I learned the art of manipulation. And I remember my father giving me $10 for my birthday. And he told me, when you get to grandma's house, make sure you tell your grandma that your dad gave you $20. So, you know, Johnny, I wasn't real sure why he wanted me to tell her this, but I did, and she handed me $30.
Wow.
Now, now, go back to 1972, $30 was a lot of money, especially to give to a 12-year-old on his birthday. Now, again, I'm not laying blame here, but from that moment on, that early in my life, I worked and preyed on other people. And yes, at that time in my life, I used it in childish ways, but as I came into adulthood, the stakes got much higher. And as you said, I was best known as a con man, a thief, a cheat, and a liar. And I was incredibly good at what I did. I had what any good con man needed. I had no empathy for the mark. I was guiltless in the pain and the suffering I caused other people. And fell into many addictive patterns that you could probably associate with living the way that I was living. Whatever I wanted, I got. If I could not borrow it, I would steal it. And finally, at the urging of family members, I went for professional help. To behave this way, I was told there must be something wrong. So after 30 minutes with a mental health professional, I was diagnosed with bipolar disease or a manic depression. You know, now let me say this right here, that my story is in no way an indication or an indictment of those taking SSRI medications. I know many whose lives are manageable or normal, as they say, because of the meds. But in my case, it was simple, Johnny. I was just issued a medical reason for being the way I was, and I had a bottle of pills to prove it. But in the, you know, in the long run, the diagnosis was really simple. I was a roux. I was an impassible human being, and the only thing that could have any effect on me was losing the people I needed to control. So if we could fast forward a little bit, I was in my mama's kitchen, not like your mama's kitchen, Johnny. And I went in to get something to eat. It was April the 19th, 2003 at 12:37 that afternoon. And this presence came over me. And it was nothing like I had ever experienced before. And the only thing that I can equate it to, it was God. And the message that God was giving me, I'm thinking, this is not something even in my DNA. It's nothing that I want to do. And I asked God if he would just leave me $100 and just go away and leave me alone. But it was something that did not go away. And I continued on the same path through a lot of my adulthood after that experience. But I came to a point where I understood, and it was a little bit after my experience of living on the streets of California, that the only thing that made sense to me was to surrender to the plan, put ego aside, and walk this path that God has wanted me to walk. And when I decided to do that and I embraced it, my life has really never been the same since that point.
Well, you know, you have a very interesting story when you talk about your walk through, you know, from childhood and to the present moment, and we all go through life, you know, what I consider as, you know, we just checked into the university of life and somewhere along the line when we leave home. Coming back to when you were talking about, you know, being at home and your parents got divorced, obviously, I think in some ways, again, you know, what we, Paul, you and I talk about is strictly our opinion, perhaps, and based on our individual experiences, because it is in no way we reflecting on other people. And but I have talked to a lot of people whereby in the situation on something like that where the situation creates us. And obviously you talk about, you know, being diagnosed as being bipolar, and then you realize that, you know, again, it comes back to our choices. You took one choice because choices are on this too. So one way you go is say, hey, I got a ticket to do whatever I want.
Exactly.
And, you know, right. And then on the other side, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, maybe this will fix me. So I understand exactly where you're coming from that perspective. But you went through a tremendous metamorphosis as a human being, shedding personal ego and embracing spiritualism. In hindsight, is it worth it?
Boy, that's a good question. And, you know, one of the things that I do tell people, Johnny, is I don't think that my story is that unusual. I was just fortunate enough to be able to get that word published and out. But to answer your question, for me, it was the only way. I was making a career out of destroying the lives of others, and I didn't care. And but again, I came to that point where I knew it was time to surrender to the plan God had for me, to surrender that ego in the things that I wanted to do and I thought was best, as twisted and crazy as that may sound. But in short, I would not trade one experience along the way. You know, through enlightenment, there's all types of lessons we learn through enlightenment. And, you know, for me, mine was enlightenment through tragedy. And I understand why I had to go through the things I went through, because it prepared me for the work that I am doing today.
Right, right. I think that you hit it right on the nose, because I think in your book, for example, you talk about one of the things you were saying, you know, like, okay, great, I would be able to borrow something and not return it. And you were, at that time, you were looking at it as a strictly as a down-to-earth physical side of it. You know, it's like if you were to ask me for something and I gave it to you, say, well, Johnny gave it to me. It's not God, but in all actuality, that you were being watched all this while. on how you do things, and actually God has always been providing for you, because I'm sure there are many, many times going through prior to April, I guess, you had been in very, very tight spots. And I know I have, and I speak
yes.
personal experience, where, you know, like, there's no way out. But somehow, somewhere, you know, that little pinhole becomes a dime size, and then becomes a quarter size, and then it becomes a full, you know, doorway to get
Boy,
out.
Boy, that is well, well said for sure.
So,
you know, so many, you know, it does, and I mean to interrupt, but it
yeah.
does, it really goes back to what you were talking about, you know, a few minutes ago, when you talk about choices, when you talk about decisions, there's, you know, the thing that we refer to as free will.
Mm-hmm.
It's our decision to do this. It's our decision to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we fail to realize on many occasions is those decisions that we make, mm-hmm. though we feel it might be best for us, we don't realize all the people that we are hurting and destroying along the way.
Right, right.
To get those quote unquote things.
Right.
So it really is. It really does. It comes down to choices. It comes down to decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you move from the sense of living through ego and you walk that spiritual path, the decisions and the choices are something that comes natural.
Right. Right. And one of the things also, the flip side, you know, instead of feeling guilty also for those who, you know, listen to this, and again, I'm no guru at this. I'm talking about strictly from personal experience. And I think, Paul, you can attest to this too, because we have to look at, because when you talk about, you know, being connected, we're all being connected.
Yes.
There are things that I need to learn and you need to learn. And at the same time, there are things that I need to teach, and not being condescending or anything like that. And you know, or you need to teach. To us, to you and I, for example. So what you go through is what I one of my spiritual moms talked about, is the fact that we live in a closed system where everything has its balance. You may not see it in the front side of it, where, you know, you do something and I'm doing something else, or you, for example, coming back to the simple equation here, you ask for money and I'm giving. And you said, well, gee, great. You know, let me give you an example. I had one time, I had someone that who works in my organization. This was years ago, in a different career, obviously. And he has a very interesting look at life. If he happened to walk behind you, okay, and
mm-hmm.
you happen to drop your wallet, and we're talking about big bucks here, whether it's $100 or $1,000 or whatever that drop off your pocket.
Sure.
He looks to it as God's blessing to him that you must have done something wrong, so God's punishing you, so he would not give that back to you. Now, you know, from the onside, you know, we look at it, golly, you know, that's not right.
No, that's not right.
but it has some merit in what he's saying, and I'm not, you know, this is just strictly, I'm putting it on the table here, and it's very, very interesting, because he looks at it, you know, that God is looking at his favor versus yours. On the flip side, the normal thing that what we think is right is for him to, you know, hey, Paul, you know, you dropped this, you know. And so I'm just bringing it up there. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it was a very
interesting. No, that's actually, Johnny, that's actually a good point. It's actually a good point, because it's amazing how, you know, depending on where we're at in our thought process.
Yeah.
It's amazing how we can either justify
mm-hmm.
or interpret
mm-hmm.
one thing, and while, you know, another individual interprets it a completely different way. You know, we hear this so many times when you're talking with people that
mm-hmm.
study the Bible,
right?
Where on one hand God is this bloodthirsty tyrant who is going to damn you if you
mm-hmm.
Don't follow those 10 rules, and if you don't follow those 10 rules, you're going to hell. But remember, God loves you.
Right.
And on the other hand, you know, God is this perfect love, this unconditional love that we all have inside of us. And Jesus is this this example of how we should live our lives. So, yeah, it's funny, you know, when you're just saying that this gentleman drops his wallet,
mm-hmm.
most people would say, you know what, excuse me, but you dropped this.
Right.
And somebody else looks at it as, this guy messed up, and I just happened to be in the right place, and I'm accepting God's favor.
That's right. And so what he was saying, and again, it just kind of got me into thinking, interesting analysis. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Of course, if it had been me, I would want to.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on what side of the drop you're on.
Yeah, and he, according to him, now, I don't know how religious he is, but he apparently, he can work on Sundays. He's not a Jewish person or anything like that. We're not talking about, I don't want to go off in a tangent here, but my point is it was very interesting because it's how we look at things. Whether, again, it comes to whether we're taught that way, that, hey, it's your good fortune. So why sweat it, so to speak?
Yeah.
But anyway, I do want to get back with your book. And I know you talk a lot about this because, we make decisions every day. And that's the reason why I brought it up. And I thought it was kind of interesting to... to just put it on the table, how would one react on something like that? Because it's fairly, fairly interesting. And to this day,
it's a good question.
Yeah, is it right or wrong? And what is right and what is wrong? I think that's something that that can be debatable. One way or another. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, Johnny. Because we go back to the age-old argument, what might be right for me may be wrong for you,
right,
and vice versa.
Right, right. And so, really, in all honesty, it's up to each individual to make that decision. But
correct.
In your book, you talk about the difference between religion and spirituality. Please enlighten us on the differences.
Oh, okay. This is... truly a flashpoint issue with me, and let me say first that that not all religions are the same, and
mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm in favor of anything that brings us closer to a God type experience. So, I've been told you're down on religion, but no, I'm not down on religion. But what causes me to take a step back are the teachings and subsequent hypocrisy,
mm-hmm.
Those claiming to be religious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
In short, I question how it's packaged and presented because
mm-hmm.
recently I was listening to a radio talk show about a recent trip this faith made to a poverty-stricken country to deliver food, water,
mm-hmm.
clothing, aid, and, that's very admirable. But in order for the recipients to receive this aid, they had to attend church services. In other words, no church, no aid, and the words aid and but do not belong in the same sentence. And the idea for doing something godly for others, I believe, is the greatest act of all. But using this act for the purpose of fulfilling religious agendas, to me, amounts to nothing more than spiritual extortion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We all come from the same place. All of us are created by the same God, all equal in the eyes of God. But there are some religions that exclude others based on their beliefs to not praying the right way, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime something promotes division instead of unification, in my mind, now that can't be of God. Now, when you look at spirituality asks enduring questions. Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I here? What does God expect from me?
Mm-hmm.
And these types of questions, the spiritual type of questions, these things, they come from within. And if you really take a look at spirituality and you answer those questions, honestly,
mm-hmm.
what they come down to is very, very simple. They come down to service and it comes down to purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take those two virtues and combine them and live them, it comes out to be other people. Serving other people, helping other people. Yes, there are other things that we need to do along the way, but when it comes to the topic of religion and spirituality, so many people ask me, well, when you talk about spirituality, you're really talking about religion, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, they're not even close to being the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, religion to me is the doctrine a religious view versus being spiritual is totally the practice of of the religious, I think, is the application of the knowledge that you learn from the religious standpoint of perspective. And I agree with you because especially, and people may not realize this. I think me being originally from Malaysia, have a wonderful experience in being able to judge, you know, what and seeing what you talk about, the fact that how religion in some ways has been skewed in terms of the ways it was delivered to individuals out there in terms of, you know, like, hey, I'm not going to give you this if you don't do this. But that is an age-old-long debate that I know it cannot be solved in the next 40 minutes, for sure, because history has shown that kingdoms and everything else that's been overthrown the very next day, and, you know, it's like, okay, either you proclaim to be this religion or you all die.
Right. You know, and it's really, you know, it's the use of fear, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into a village,
yeah,
where people are starving, they have no water,
mm-hmm,
they have no clothing,
yeah,
and you appear with the necessities of life that these people need,
yeah,
and you tell them, if you want the aid, you have to believe what we're telling you. Well,
right,
they're going to stand on their head. They're going to do anything that
right,
you know, that you ask them to do. And that certainly isn't a godly act. And you know, in a lot of times, the messages,
mm-hmm,
that that religion brings to us, you just have to scratch your head. Like,
right,
how could somebody associate God's love to flying airplanes into buildings and killing thousands and thousands of innocent lives?
Mm-hmm.
You have the Christian fundamentalist that is pro-life,
mm-hmm,
and killing is not something we do, but yet they can justify the bombing of an abortion clinic.
Mm-hmm.
The messages are just, when I look at some of the messages that come from religion, and some of the people that are speaking,
mm-hmm,
the things that they're speaking, I think they need to go back and read their Bibles again,
mm-hmm,
because they're really misinterpreting what the word really is.
Right. But I got a good one for you, because that is a theological kind of situation, whether you're, you know, whether whatever religious background you believe in all that. My mom has always told me that, you know, it doesn't matter what religion that you practice and everything else. From that perspective, you need to be, you know, you got to believe that there's something that's higher and greater and more powerful than you are.
God bless her.
And that's spiritual grounding. But I've got this something that I want to share with you, which is kind of interesting, because,
sure,
you know, and you, coming back again, you talk about, you know, someone who is pro-life and pro versus pro-abortion and whatnot. You know, and you have someone, and this is a true story. I've kind of not necessarily followed this guy, but it so happens that, you know, his face was on plastered all over the TV, because there was a time there where, you know, yeah, you know, we're for life and we're for this and all this, you know, and coming back to what you talked about, the hypocrisy, because, yeah, I'm for life, I'm for this, da-da-da-da-da, and all that. Well, that's great, wonderful, you're championing the right things. However, come to find out that he's behind in his child support. You know, so I look at it, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you are for pro-life, right? You are this, and I agree it's admirable and all that, but, you know, then what are you doing?
Exactly.
You know, are you feeding this child? This is your own child, for God's sake, you know?
Exactly.
And so,
you know,
it just don't make sense. Is this
no, bad? And, you know, I think what I'd like to point out to the people that are listening to us right now, I believe that anybody's faith that they believe in should be respected,
mm-hmm,
and not stepped on.
Right. You don't have to but you just respect their opinion.
Right. I'm just offering my own opinions, and to the listeners out there, I'm certainly not attempting to offend, but,
mm-hmm,
you know, just one more example of what you were talking about, the Christian preacher that lived in Colorado, and,
mm-hmm,
he was he was preaching on gay and homosexuality, and it's wrong, and you're going to be going to hell, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, so on and so forth. And 2 months later, come to find out, he was involved with what? A male prostitute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when he goes in front of his congregation, you know, he gets forgiven and he fell into bad hands, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's somebody that's outside of their faith, they're just bad people, mm-hmm. and it's the devil and everything else. And that's where tolerance, understanding, just really goes out the window when it comes to religion.
Well, ultimately, it's, you know, we as man choose to interpret the you know, the word of God according to what best suits us. So that's the difference. I think in all honesty,
yeah, I like that.
And that's why we have all this chaos, because in the very beginning, there's only one Bible. When I say Bible, you're not necessarily, you know, the Christian Catholic or the Jewish Bible, whatnot. So just period. There's only one word of God, period.
Correct.
And that, you know, we can take it any way we want. But then the division comes is because man, and again, coming back to your book, which is very interesting, we talk about ego. As we progress within our lives, and then we realize that, hey, we got to interject a few things here and there. And that's very, very much what happened, in my opinion. You mentioned something very interesting about in your book, which I thought is wonderful. Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? Please tell us about that.
Yes. There was a lawyer. Jesus was preaching, and a lawyer asked him, what is the greatest commandment of all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was interesting to me because at that point, Christ had an option. He could have said, all the commandments are the same. They all carry the same weight. No commandment is any different in order than the rest. But he didn't say that. The greatest commandment was to love God with all your heart. And the second was to love as I have loved you.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do look at all the commandments and everything that religion teaches us, as far as you have to be born again, you have to be baptized in water, you have to do this, you have to do that, the greatest commandment of all is love.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read that and you think about it, it really cuts through a lot of, I don't want to call it red tape, but a lot of the dogma that we've been led to believe as truth. And it comes down to the one thing that we're just talking about here with what Jesus Christ said. Love God, love as I have loved you.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there is the greatest of all commandments. And I have found through my walk that it is the greatest commandment. And it's the only way. Well, at least for me, it's the only way to live life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's completely authentic freedom is what I like to call it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you also had a wonderful story about my four boyfriends.
Yes.
You know, with our listeners this morning about that, I thought that was a fabulous story.
It is. It's a cute story. I do have it in my book, and if we have a couple of minutes, I could take the time and read it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I will read it. It's on page 32, and it goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a girl who had four boyfriends. She loved the fourth boyfriend the most and adored him with rich robes and treated him to the finest of delicacies. She gave him nothing but the best. She also loved her third boyfriend very much, and was always showing him off to neighboring kingdoms. However, she feared that one day he would leave her for another. She also loved her second boyfriend. He was her confidant and was always kind, considerate, and patient with her. Whenever the girl faced a problem, she would confide in him, and he would help her get through the difficult times. The girl's first boyfriend was a very loyal partner and had made great contributions in maintaining her wealth and kingdom. However, she did not love her first boyfriend. Although he loved her deeply, she hardly took notice of him. One day the girl fell ill, and she knew her time was short. She thought of her luxurious life and wondered, I now have four boyfriends with me, but when I die, I'll be alone. Thus she asked the fourth boyfriend, I loved you the most, endowed you with the finest clothing, and showered you great care over you. Now that I am dying, will you follow me and keep me company? No way, replied the fourth boyfriend, and he walked away without a word. The sad girl then asked her third boyfriend, I loved you all my life. Now that I am dying, Will you follow me and keep me company? No, replied the third boyfriend. Life is too good. When you die, I am going to marry someone else. Her heart sank and turned cold. She then asked her second boyfriend, I have always turned to you for help, and you've always been there for me. When I die, will you follow me and keep me company? I'm sorry, I can't do this time, replied the second boyfriend. At the very most, I can only walk with you to your grave. Then a voice called out, I'll go with you. I'll follow you no matter where you go. The girl looked up, and there was her first boyfriend. He was very skinny, and he suffered from malnutrition and neglect. Greatly grieved, the girl said, I should have taken better care of you when I had the chance. In truth, you have four boyfriends in your lives. Your fourth boyfriend is your body. No matter how much time and effort you lavish in making it look good, it will leave you when you die. Your third boyfriend is your possessions, status, and wealth. When you die, it will all go to others. Your second boyfriend is your family and friends. No matter how much they have been there for you, the furthest they can travel is to your grave. And your first boyfriend is your soul. It is often neglected in pursuit of wealth, power, and the pleasures of the world. However, your soul is the only thing that will follow you wherever you go. Cultivate, strengthen, and cherish it now, for it is the only part of you that will follow you to the throne of God and continue with you throughout eternity. It's a great story, isn't it?
Well, beautiful story. Very well written. Really enjoyed reading that. And sometimes these are the things that sometimes we're not mindful enough because... And this is the flip side, which is very interesting, because are we thinking about the future, the past, or being present? Sometimes being present can be wrong in the sense that all we're thinking about is we, and we don't think about long-term implications. And having said that, sometimes in life we think too much of the past, the future, and not the present.
So exactly.
It's part
of the human condition.
Precisely. But I like the story in the sense that it does let us know that, as we walk through our lives every day, what are we thinking about? And that's something that it's open for debate for everyone to understand. What are you thinking about today? And what is important to you? The material things in life, the spiritual balance that's important. I have met someone that this is very interesting because you talk about, obviously you lived in California for a while, but I met someone at one time that her favorite show is The Girls Next Door because she looks at that as something that, immediate gratification.
Right.
Having the opportunity to do whatever she wants and being able to, to do it at leisure and be shy with all those, things that she's looking for, materials, side of the equation, so to speak.
And ego, that's the only thing that ego understands, Johnny, is instant gratification.
I like that very much. And I also like the way you use Cicero, a Roman writer and philosopher, his brilliant take on mankind, the six mistakes of man. Let us talk about that, the six mistakes, from your perspective, your insights of them. The first one is the delusion that personal gain is made by crushing others. What's your
Yes.
thought?
Yeah, when Cicero wrote this paper, over 2,000 years ago, he was trying to instill morality into the thought process of his fellow Romans, basically the writings of the Greeks. And as I read the paper and I took a look at the six mistakes, I thought about the year 2008. And I thought to myself, as I read these mistakes, nothing has really changed, over the last 2,000 years as far as some of the things that were troubling to Cicero that he wrote about and some of the things that we read about today. They're pretty much the same things that haunted Cicero as they haunt us, as I said today. But as we go through the six mistakes, you want to keep in mind the five components of ego. And the five components of ego are I am what I have, I am what I do. I am what others think of me. I am separate from others, and I am separate from God. Now, those five components of ego are very important to these six mistakes. And the first one, as Johnny pointed out, was the delusion that personal gain is made by crushing others. Mm-hmm. Boy, this is just as prevalent today as it was back then, because this is really a mindset that, you know, it goes along with motivational tapes or motivational training, so to speak, because if you go to a motivational seminar or you listen to these types of tapes, it's, you know, put your head down, move forward, don't let anybody get in your way, step on anybody that steps on you. And it's a very egotistical thought process, because when you take this mistake and you turn it into a more of a spiritual context, cooperation replaces competition. And through cooperation is how things, it's through how we gain things. Mm-hmm. And I think this first mistake is more of a mistake here in the West. Mm-hmm. I mean, Western philosophy, because this is something that was stamped, endorsed, and we ran with it. But, you know, eventually, as they say, when what comes around goes around, what you reap, you sow. Eventually, those that do the crushing eventually are the ones that get crushed in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, if you're a bully, then you eventually are going to be bullied back. And that comes back to the idea of no matter how strong you are. My dad always told me that. Even my mom had mentioned that to me, you know, the fact that when you're growing up as a kid, just because you think that, well, you're smart, but guess what? There'll always be someone smarter than you are.
Exactly.
And if you're strong, there'll always be someone stronger than you are.
Exactly.
She taught me how to be a little bit more mindful, and rather than, you know, to stick myself out there and the fall is going to be real hard, because and the interesting part about it is that the actual fall does not hurt as much as the ego being crushed.
Exactly.
And, you know, whether it's individual or as a group or as an organization, I think that's when ego is bruised, it actually hurts more than the actual physical, hurt that we get from, you know, anything that happened to us. I think that's
it does, Johnny. Because when ego is bruised, it's a multi-layer bruising, and we feel it on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. And ego is probably, you know, the most destructive force there is to the human being. Mm-hmm. It certainly is the biggest block to walking any type of spiritual path. Mm-hmm. You can't walk a spiritual path as long as you're living through ego. It goes into the second mistake that Cicero wrote about, the tendency to worry about things that cannot be changed or corrected.
Right.
And along with this comes what? Fear. Worry. When you stop to think about it, fear, worry, these things aren't real. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as worry. There's no such thing as fear. These are things that we have created. I mean, look at a child that when they come into the world or they first begin walking, the parent, the main job of a parent is really to stop their child from committing suicide. Because they have no fear. They don't understand that if you walk out in the middle of the street, you can get hit by a car. So children have no concept of ego. They have no concept of fear. They have no concept of worry. They know one thing and one thing only, and that is love. But as time goes on, what happens? They begin taking on the five components of ego. They begin to take on these condition-type beliefs of what mom and dad tell you to believe in, teachers, religious leaders, and you begin to take on this belief system. And we get to a certain age where we take a look at this and you go, why do I believe in this? Mm-hmm. And it's at this point here is where we look at those beliefs, we challenge those beliefs, and usually we take on a new set of beliefs. But going back a little bit, because I started getting off there a little bit. Mm-hmm. When you think about worry, if there's something in your control, then why worry about it? If there's something out of your control and there's nothing you could do about it, then why worry about it? Mm-hmm. There's the idea of worry and fear is something, it's just a classic state of mind of ego, which fear isn't real, worry isn't real, control isn't real, but neither is ego. Either, these are things that we have created in our own minds. And again, I hate to keep going back to the same point, but in order to live from an authentic position in life, to live from the perspective of who we really are, to experience that authentic freedom, we have to shed that ego, or at best harness it.
Right. Well, it's very true. And again, from a practicality standpoint of view, I once read the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. And, of course, you know, he's a Mormon, but the wonderful concepts of life. Now, whether his Mormon principles were in the book, I'm sure there are some applications of it and everything else, but certainly from a brilliant perspective, I mean, based on what you mentioned about worrying about things that you cannot change or correct it, one can look at it this way, like, you know, in a nutshell, what he's saying is that you have a circle of influence and you have a circle of concerns. Circle of influence is you. You can change yourself. You're in total control. And that comes back to that decisions that we make every day. And the circle of concerns, anything that's but you.
Exactly.
You can meet people, and you can't change that. And so having said that, let it go. And things will work itself out eventually because, you know, and it's not about ego. It's about understanding that, you know, there are things in life that you just have to let go and not to worry about because the most important thing is you. And then if you look at yourself and looking it from inside out, then, you know, there's no worry, there's no fear from that perspective. So
yeah, you know, because letting go, you know, we're at one point in all of our lives, we're going to have to let go. We're going to have no choice.
Right, right.
And by living our lives without, you know, the notion of having to be attached to things is that ego-free living.
Right.
Because the things that, you know, we were talking about this, I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, we work so hard to hold on to these things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these things are not ours, and they can be gone in a second. They could be stolen.
Right.
They could burn up in a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And these types of things, and what happens is we become identified by these quote-unquote objects.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when we lose these objects, when somebody steals them, or when we get too old and we can no longer work? Well, these objects are now gone, so what happens to us personally is since we've been identified by these objects, we have now lost our own identity.
Right, right.
And it's a very, very dangerous place to be.
Very true, very true. The third one is insisting that a thing is impossible and because we cannot accomplish it. Whenever something that we cannot accomplish, then it's impossible. I believe that that's not true from my perspective because many, many times I've told people that just because you can't accomplish it, the two things in the scenario, either you don't have the right players involved to get the plan executed, or you're not executing it the right way where it needs to be done. And that comes back down to, you know, that the ego tells you that I'm the best. That
yes,
if I
without
can do
a doubt.
It, no one else can do it, and that's not true.
No, I tend to agree with you on that because, and I'll go back to what you were just talking about when you talk about execution.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of people, they end up failing. I don't like to use that word fail, but they don't see the project to fruition, so to speak.
Right.
One of the things that ego, like you and I talked about, is the ego demands instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
But to accomplish some things, what does it take? It takes time. It takes perseverance. And in order to get those things through accomplishment, patience, persistence, those types of things must come into play. But if we're operating from, you know, that state of mind we call ego, it's certainly going to quit. You know, we see that with weight loss programs all the time. Mm-hmm. You see these programs on TV where they promise you the world's fair. You're going to lose 20 pounds in 10 days, and all you have to do is buy this program and eat this food or use this exercise equipment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the weight's going to come off, and people buy this stuff, and they buy these programs. And when they get these programs and they start to do the exercise, they eat the food, they follow this program, mm-hmm. and they find that it's not working. And what happens is they quit. Mm-hmm. And what they fail to realize is in that small print, it says, you must eat properly and exercise in conjunction with this program. There's always a laid out road, a laid out plan to follow to get anything in life. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm a firm believer that you can get anything in life you want. It doesn't matter that there's a recession, a depression. None of this stuff matters. There's a specific plan that we all need to follow. It's a spiritual walk. And if we do that in accordance with the plan, we will get the things that we most desire in life. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to shedding the ego, harnessing it as best as possible, and walking the spiritual path.
And that leads us to, you know, number four, when Cicero talked about refusing to set aside trivial preferences, and I think that's just common sense, where if you are hung up on specific pieces of things that really, when it's all said and done, you're sweating over the small stuff, it's ridiculous. That's what's holding you back. And that's where it comes in, where, you know, is it ego talking or is it the practical side of living that's talking about? And
mm-hmm.
so that's the two scenarios that you look at. What I like about that, you know, of course, he mentioned that, like you say, interestingly enough, 2,000 years ago, and I'm glad, you know, as you wrote this, of course, you include this in your presentation, is the neglect of developing and refining our own mind, not acquiring the habit of reading and studying and so forth, because we feel like we know it all already.
That's a big problem, Johnny.
Go ahead.
You know, especially in the day and age of with two parents working,
mm-hmm.
Xboxes, computer games, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
There was actually a study done that children gain more weight in the summertime than any other time of the year. And you'd think, well, summertime, the kids are out of school. There's activities. There's all kinds of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in truth, nowadays, summertime leaves much more time for uninspiring activities,
mm-hmm.
such as computer games, video games, eating, snacking, mm-hmm. and just not doing the things that Cicero wrote about over 2,000 years ago when he talks about the refining of the mind, reading, reading periodicals, watching good things on television to feed your mind, just like you do, you need to feed your body.
Right, right. And it's very, very true. And the final thing that Cicero wrote about, and which is very interesting, again, this is, it's alive and well. Attempting
yes,
to
it
tell
is.
Others to believe and live as the way we do. And right or wrong
yes.
is irrelevant here, but what I'm wanting to present to people, and I know you do too, is for us to do, you know, a mindful check. Are we attempting to compel others to believe and live as we do, or are we just merely respecting them for who they are? I look at it this way, Paul. I present windows of solutions or windows of situations, and then it's up to you to pick and choose whatever you want. Having said that, you know, whatever you decide, so that you can take ownership of your decisions, not mine.
I agree with you. And what's funny is if you look up the word compel in the dictionary,
mm-hmm.
it means to force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we get to a point where we actually believe that by forcing others into believing the things that we believe, that they're going to live their lives in accordance to what works for us, because that's usually, you know, usually the message that gets sent, you know, that gets sent out, this worked for me, it's going to work for you too. And that is not really the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately we see this a lot these days, like you were saying, especially in the arenas of religion.
Mm-hmm.
if you don't think the way we do, believe the way we do, well, what's the result right now, Johnny? We're in wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's no, you know, there's no right or wrong, actually. It's because people have to just come back and to be looking at within themselves, because I think a lot of times when you look at something like this is that the projection is external, but in all actuality, what I gather from reading your book is more of internal, where,
yes,
you know, self-generating.
Very good.
Yeah, and that's very, very interesting, because in your book, reading your book, I realized that we both shared a common universal language, which is unconditional love. You talk about God's love, and I talk about motherly love. And,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, people don't realize when you talk about the purest love, which is unconditional love, then there's no attachments to it. There's no precondition.
You're so right, Johnny.
That's nothing that, you know, you accept situation as is, and giving each individual, or whatever you want to call it, the latitude, again, coming back to full circle in terms of free will. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that if you start inflicting pain to me, then I should accept it. But my point is the fact that, you know, when you embrace the concept of unconditional love, you have a totally different mindset. You're looking at things differently, and you are at a different level of spiritualism, I guess, from that perspective, or whether it's religious experience or spiritual experience, you have a different kind of experience. So how has this, discovering this and experiencing this kind of love, transformed you personally, Paul?
Boy, that's a good question, a real good question. And thanks for asking this, because this is something I really I like to talk about, but
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can best describe it as authentic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you live from this type of love, you abandon all the counterfeit notions of who you are,
mm-hmm.
and what your divine purpose is. And the way this love transformed me is because this love is available to you, it's available to me, it's available to all the beautiful souls that are listening to
mm-hmm.
our program right now.
Mm-hmm.
At some level, we are all related, every one of us. It does not matter what side of the water you live, where you enter the universe, your color, your creed, your orientation. None of this stuff matters. None of it matters.
Mm-hmm.
We come from a place of perfect love, one love that is the only love that matters. You know, some are black, some are white, Asian, tall, short. This only matters to ego, the part of us that wants to see how we're different. And when it comes to difference, what we believe is different in the end is going to make no difference after all, because we all share the same nationality, Johnny, and that is spirit.
Right. I agree. And one of the things that you talk about towards the final end of your book, you know, which I strongly believe is that being grateful, having a grateful soul and the power of belief. Please share some of your experience with this.
Boy, one of the phrases that I used to hear that I would just could never imagine could be true,
mm-hmm.
was when somebody would say, "It's better to give than receive."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was for me, it was better to steal than anything. You know, that's where I was. But the notion it's better to give to receive is very, very true. I remember when I came back, I was homeless. I had no car, I had no money, I had no job, no clothes, no place to live. And my brother-in-law loaned me enough money to get a car so I could make it back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when I really had my first bout with gratitude. And
mm-hmm.
it was the most incredible feeling that I ever had. It was awesome. That I was able to drive to work, that I would see people sleeping under viaducts or in dumpsters as I was driving by, and knowing how that feels
mm-hmm.
and how I can relate to that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I was fortunate enough to have an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I paid my car payment sometimes 2 weeks ahead of time. And
mm-hmm.
Eventually, I paid the vehicle off, and I bought myself a brand new vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And in the art of giving, my nephew today drives that car, because I had it sitting in the garage as a reminder of just how fortunate I was.
Mm-hmm.
but it was just sitting there doing nothing. And so I passed that vehicle on to my nephew so he could experience the same type of a feeling with gratitude that I had.
Fantastic. How can someone purchase your book and get in touch with you to arrange for a speaking engagement?
Oh, to get a copy of my book or to learn some of the other things about me, you can go to www.pauljwedding.com. For speaking engagements, they can leave me an email at paul@pauljwedding.com, or they can call me direct at 586-838-4068.
Great, wonderful. What can we expect from you in 2010?
Oh, big things coming in 2010, Johnny. I should have my second book put together. That is titled I May Be Wrong, But I Doubt It. I know it sounds a little arrogant, but there
hey,
is really
ego, huh?
No, it's a book based on spiritual truth.
I understand.
Universal truth. So, yes, I'm pretty sure that it's quite accurate. Mm-hmm. We're also starting filming of a movie based on the book.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be traveling to Russia, to India, and talking to folks about what's the meaning of happiness and those types of things, those endearing questions, as well as filming here in the United States. So lots of good things we're looking forward to in 2010, and I appreciate your listeners keeping up with me and keeping up with email addresses and so on. I love to stay in touch with people as well.
Fantastic. I mean, that sounds, you're going to have a spectacular 2010. That's wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show, and for the guests that I have on this show, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all our listeners this morning?
Boy, that's good, Johnny. Matter of fact, last night I was thinking about this, and I posted it on my Facebook page, which if people are on Facebook, they can find me there at www.facebook.com/author Paul Wedding. And I posted, take nobody or no thing for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Because time has no respect for you, has no respect for any of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we run around about our day, accomplishing this, accomplishing that, taking care of business. And in those types of activities, we so often forget about the things that are really important to us. And the last thing you want to do is look back when you get to a certain time in your life and look back and say, boy, there's a lot of things that I just missed out on because I was too busy doing other things or taking this for granted or not paying attention to what was really important while I was busy pursuing things that are gone and even no longer in my life. So I would say my recipe for living today is take nothing for granted. Embrace it while you have it.
Wonderful, fantastic recipe. Paul, thank you for that great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning as we continue with our countdown to Christmas and the New Year's. My guest will be Kristin Masker. She is the past president and national spokesperson for Mothers and More. Kristin, who owns and manages her own successful company, has firsthand experience of the many challenges working mothers encounter in their daily lives of shared responsibility and co-parenting. She also cherishes the many rewards when things do go the right way. Her book, This Is Not How I Thought It Would Be, Remodeling Motherhood to Give the Lives We Want Today, is a candid show about how you can remodel your motherhood life to get the life you want today. We will be discussing her life's journey as a mompreneur preparing for the holidays and her new book. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful week. Paul, thank you again and have a great day.
You too, Johnny. God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.